If you're a regular listener, you know that my lovely wife, Priscilla, is also a law professor. What you might not know is that she's done something extraordinary. She's gone out and gotten herself a Fulbright Fellowship. She is over in Lithuania, in the capital city of Vilnius, at a place called Vilnius University, where she's teaching students from all over Europe about all sorts of important things. Recently, I had the opportunity to go and visit Priscilla, and while I was there, we did all sorts of fun things. She let me teach some of her classes, had a presentation at the Lithuanian Court of Appeals, and I also got to meet some of the very nice people with whom she's working, notably the dean of Vilnius University's Law School, Tomas Stavulis. We'll speak to Tomas today and Priscilla. It's your weekly constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and this week it's all about the law faculty at Vilnius University.
Stay tuned for your weekly constitutional, a weekly discussion of interesting constitutional issues from gay rights to gun rights. YWC is produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's Montpelier and is hosted by Stuart Harris, who teaches constitutional law at Lincoln Memorial University's Duncan School of Law. And it's starting now.
Have you ever been to Lithuania? Do you know where Lithuania is? If you're an American and geographically challenged like many of us are, maybe you've got some vague notions, so let me enlighten you. It's in the northern part of Europe, right along the Baltic. It's often lumped together with a couple of other very different countries who are just to the north of it, Latvia and Estonia. And it's very near Belarus and, notably, Russia. It's on what we might call the front line of the divide between the western part of Europe and what remains of the Eastern Bloc. In fact, it's a member of the European Union, and it's a member of NATO, something that we'll talk about a little bit later. My wife, Priscilla, another law professor, is in Vilnius, in Lithuania, teaching at the law faculty of Vilnius University, where she's enlightening all sorts of students from all over Europe about our constitutional system, and she's learning a great deal from them about theirs. Her boss while she's over there is a fellow by the name of Tomas Stavulis, who is the dean of the law faculty at Vilnius University. And we'll speak to him a little bit later. But first, let's get the skinny on the Fulbright from our Fulbright scholar.
It's been a wonderful and an amazing experience, and I really wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, good, but you have to be more specific than that. What's so great about it? What's been so amazing about it?
It's been great personally and professionally. I've just enjoyed living in a European city that goes back hundreds of years. I've enjoyed working at the Vilnius University Faculty of Law and teaching students from 12 or so different countries. I've met some very interesting people. I've been very impressed with the Lithuania Court of Appeals and the Lithuania Supreme Court. It's just been an all-around fabulous experience.
But you're there in a Fulbright, so for the uninitiated, what exactly is a Fulbright? What are you supposed to be doing while you're there?
Well, the Fulbright program awards grants every year, and it's run by the U.S. State Department. And it started back in the 40s, and it was the idea of a Senator Fulbright from Arkansas. And it was a way for Americans to interact with people, teachers, professors, students from other countries, exchange ideas, exchange thoughts. And there's all kinds of Fulbrights. I've been under what's called a core Fulbright scholar program. That's either a semester or a year. I'm here for a semester. And you can either teach, conduct research, or do both. I've been teaching, and I've been teaching in English. And so, there's all different kinds of Fulbrights for students, for professors. And I encourage everyone to go to the website if they're interested. And the website is CIES.org, because the State Department works with private organizations to help run the program. Mm-hmm. And that has all the information about the programs. And I know for the professors, for the teaching programs, there's an August deadline. So if anyone's interested, that might be too soon to make. But I encourage everyone to look at it.
CIES.org, and we should give a hat tip to Ed Kelly at the University Council at East Tennessee State University, who also has done a Fulbright to Lithuania in the past and who encouraged you to apply and was very, very helpful. And his very good friend, Remigius, who is a lawyer there at the Court of Appeals and who's been very helpful to you and also very helpful to me because, of course, I'm just back from a visit seeing you there, feeling a little bit silly doing this via Skype because I had my little recorder with me the whole time I was in Vilnius and just forgot to record our conversation. So this is sort of...
Well, we were very busy. You helped me with two of my classes. You spoke at the Court of Appeals. We were touring around the city.
Yeah, we did. We saw everything, and especially thanks to Remigius for that part of it, the touring. And thanks also, of course, to the dean there at Vilnius University at the law school, Tomas, did a fantastic job. And he and his colleague, Vigita, took you and me out to dinner, and it was kind of funny because we sat down at this restaurant, and I had no idea, you know, what the food was or where it was, and he put the menu in front of me, and it was in both Lithuanian and English, but the English was harder to see, and so I was looking at all this unfamiliar stuff, and Tomas said to me, well, what would you like? And I said, well, give me something really authentically Lithuanian, and he and Vigita looked at each other and laughed and said, well, this isn't a Lithuanian restaurant. It was some sort of Mediterranean restaurant. Which I thought was rather funny, but it was very good food, and they were very, very helpful to us. So you've met a lot of really nice people there.
Yes, I have. I've met two Gintaras who have been wonderful
Gintara.
To help me.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And yeah, I met one Gintara. She runs the PhD program there, right?
No, that is Deauville.
Deauville, okay.
And then Javille, she runs the Erasmus LLM program. She's been wonderful. And one of the PhD students, Simona, has been very helpful. She actually picked me up from the airport and my luggage.
Wow.
So everyone here has just been very nice. And I also need to get some thanks to the people at the U.S. Embassy. Ambassador Hall has been wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And Reza at the U.S. Embassy has been fabulous. And I even had help from the Lithuanian Embassy just to get here with Vadim. And I know I'm probably mispronouncing his name. He helped me with my visa.
Well, I'm gonna rise in your defense here. Lithuania is an extremely difficult language for English speakers. Tomas told me it's one of the oldest languages in Europe, maybe the very oldest language that's currently spoken there. It goes all the way back to the Indo-European language, and it's unique. It's not a Slavic language. It's sort of in its own group, and there are even variations of the language there. So it's very, very difficult for non-native speakers, and the names are difficult to pronounce. But the people are really, really great.
And one of the greatest of them, one of the friendliest people I've met in a long, long time, is a fellow by the name of Tomas Davulis, who is the dean of the Vilnius University Law Faculty, and with whom I sat down in a charming restaurant in the old city right down from the main campus.
Labas, qua jus verda.
Labas, mano vardas Tomas.
In English now?
In English, hello, my name is Tomas, and to be more...
Tomas Davulis.
Tomas Davulis.
Davulis.
Exactly, and I'm a lawyer, I'm a practicing lawyer, and I'm also academic.
Academic, in fact, you're the dean.
Yes, I am professor of labor law at the Vilnius University, and that's how I'm currently, I'm also the dean of the law faculty of Vilnius University.
And Vilnius University is the oldest and most prestigious university in all of Lithuania.
Well, I would say for even in maybe all Baltic states.
Really? All the Baltic states?
Because the Vilnius University was established by Jesuits in 1579.
Wait a minute. Our history doesn't go back that far. I don't understand. I thought it all started in the 1600s in North America.
No, actually, we did something also in this part of the world.
You did, even before we did. Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'm learning something.
Well, you will, of course. You're right, probably mentioning that this is one of the oldest universities in Eastern Europe, basically, because we were established after Prague, after Krakow University, and at that time, we were most Eastern university in Europe. But the law faculty was also established a few years ago, 1641. So last year we were celebrating 375th anniversary.
375 years, wow.
5 years of our existence. And at that time, Vilnius University was a very multicultural city. A lot of nationalities were living here in peace, in harmony. And you saw in Vilnius so many churches, so many cultural, architectural heritage buildings. Actually, this is all our history, which is a history of prosperity, history of tolerance, and history of academic freedom.
What are some of the nationalities that have been in Vilnius?
Today, we are in Lithuania, a very homogeneous country, because today we are 90% Catholics, 80% Lithuanians.
Right.
So we speak our own original language, which is not Slavic language.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That was something I learned when I was here. Just to listen to it with my untrained ears, it sounds like it's a Slavic language to me, and I made the assumption that because you're next to Poland and because you're near Russia and Belarus, that that would be a Slavic language, and I was immediately corrected. Yes. It's not a Slavic language at all, is it?
Well, we sometimes are very sensitive and willing to also protect, but also to underline the importance of history. Lithuanian language is one of the oldest languages in the world. Some say that this is the language which is quite near to Sanskrit language from the origin, but this is one of the two remaining languages in Indo-European language family in Baltic, so Lithuanian.
Indo-European, yeah, I've heard of that, and yes. That was like the original European language.
But not German language, not Slavic language, this is different family.
Right.
So we are very proud of the language. And I would say because we were able to survive with our language, it helped us through all the history to fight aggression, to be independent, to think and live the way we think it's right. So Lithuanian nation was always looking for history, for tradition, for the strength in the languages, in the culture, in the language, in the culture. And this also helped us to survive a few times of aggression.
Quite a few times. And just in the recent past, of course, there were the Germans, and then there were the Russians and the Russians.
And Soviets. So,
yeah, yes. Exactly right. So lots and lots of things. But through all of this, you preserve your language. So congratulations. And it's a lovely language. I've been very impressed by it. I think it's very beautiful. And I find it also very difficult to pronounce, which is why you had to coach me for 5 minutes before I could say hello and what's your name. But I appreciate that.
But you don't have this in your language, but we have also the special word for those people who were bringing books from the Germany to Lithuania, because the Lithuanian language was forbidden in Russian aggression times in the 19th century. They were called the book smugglers.
Book smugglers.
They were bringing illegally books from Königsberg to the Kaliningrad area, just by bringing the on by feet to Lithuania for kids to learn in the secret schools.
Wow.
So this is our history. This is how we preserved our language.
Which reminds me of another place that you just showed me a few minutes ago, the lovely library that's at the center of your university. Could you tell me just a little bit about that? It's been around for hundreds of years, right?
The library was established a few decades earlier than the university itself. So we started with the library, and the library is essential element of each university, of each high school. So the library first, then university second. And even today, we feel that the library should be the center of the higher education. And this particular library is very famous because it has the most valuable pieces of literature, of literary heritage of Lithuania, our country. So you can find the books from 15th century, from 16th century, and a remarkable collection.
And many of them with illustrations, some of them in color. In fact, there were several very amusing drawings of people. I think the heading was debauchery.
Yes.
And they were showing drinking and all sorts of carousing.
Very actual topic.
So Lithuanians like to have a good time as well.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris. And today we're talking about Lithuania, specifically the law faculty at Vilnius University, where my wife, Priscilla, is a Fulbright scholar. Earlier we talked to Priscilla, and now we're talking to the dean of the law faculty, Tomas Davulis. After the break, we'll have our constitutional quiz, then we'll come back, speak some more with Tomas, and then later on, we'll have a few more minutes with Priscilla. Stick around. Now it's time for our constitutional quiz, and this week we have a real treat for you. We have a quiz that was recorded in one of my wife Priscilla's law classes at Vilnius University. We've done a lot of these, so you're going to be hearing them for the next several weeks. Here's the first one.
My name is Andrea Alexandru.
Andrea?
Yeah.
Alexander?
Yeah.
And you're from where?
I'm from Romania.
From Romania? What part of Romania?
Near the capital, so it's the southern part.
And what is the capital of Romania?
Bucharest.
Bucharest?
Yep.
And what brings you to Lithuania, of all places?
Well, I'm actually studying in England, so I wanted to do an Erasmus exchange student somewhere in Europe, and I could choose Lithuania, between Lithuania and other two countries, but I had friends in Lithuania, and I had connections, so I could easily adjust here.
Well, that's a good reason to come here. It's also just a nice place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very nice.
In the summer especially.
Right. In the summer especially, yeah. Now that it's nice and warm outside, that's right. And you're in part of the Erasmus program. What is the Erasmus program?
Well, it's an educational program in the university with that has a purpose to send students abroad and exchange the knowledge and see different types of system of education.
Right. And so in this particular class where we're sitting right now, there are students here from Germany.
Yeah.
And from France. And from Kazakhstan. Right. And where else? From the Czech Republic. Did I get everybody? And from Italy. From Italy as well. So this is quite a conglomeration and collection of people. And who's your professor?
Priscilla Harris.
Priscilla Harris. And what class is your favorite class here?
This one?
Oh,
probably.
Of course it is. And you've been studying American legal system, haven't you?
Yeah.
Very good. So now this is your final examination. Everything depends upon your answer to this question. Okay. Let me see. Who is the father of the American Constitution?
Madison, James Madison.
James Madison, well done. Excellent job. Now what can you tell us about James Madison? What do you know about James Madison?
He was a smart guy.
A smart guy, uh-huh.
He took the ideas from all the other European countries and summarized them.
Right.
And put them in the Constitution, American Constitution.
Right. And what was one of his most important ideas in the American Constitution? The one he got from Montesquieu.
The one about the separation of power.
The separation of powers,
avoid,
right.
Yeah, to avoid the authoritarian regime or to avoid the abuse of power.
Right. Absolutely. And what was the most important thing about Madison? He was short. And so short men are the best constitutional scholars, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for your time, Andrea. We appreciate your playing. And you get a pocket constitution from James Madison's Montpelier. And we're also going to send you a T-shirt.
Thank you.
So make sure you give us your size and your mailing address. Give that to Professor Harris, and we will send it to you in Bucharest.
Or in England.
Or in England. Is that where you're going next,
yeah.
In England? Well, wherever you're going next, we will send it to you.
Okay, thank you.
And now it's time to return to our discussion with Dr. Tomas Davulis, who is the dean of the law faculty at Vilnius University Law School in Lithuania. And for the past semester, at least, the boss of my wife, Priscilla Harris, who's on a Fulbright fellowship. You'll notice some music in the background of our discussion. I hope you don't find it disturbing. I think it's rather pretty. We were in a coffee house right down from the main university in the old city. It was so nice.
You also said something very funny when we were when you were showing me around the center of the university. It's right next to the presidential palace. And my wife Priscilla was with us, and she said, "Oh, you're right next to the center of power." And your response was,
"The power is next to the university."
And that was not merely pride, that was actual fact. Tell me a little bit about the special status of Vilnius University.
I would say that this is a very interesting constitutional provision in our constitution from 92, which declares the autonomy of the universities. And of course, as a principle, it's could be sometimes contentless, but if you have some problems of relationship with the power, of relationship with the government, starting from student fees, decision on how to be managed, what is the free academic freedom, then sometimes those questions could end up in the Constitutional Court. Therefore, we had a few very important decisions of the Constitutional Court, which established the real autonomy of the university, how the university should be governed. Even if this is a state university, but the autonomy of the university, the management, it comes from the history, but it has certain purpose and meaning. That the ministry, for instance, that the government could not have a central influence or the main influence on how and what should be research, how we educate, and to restrict somehow academic freedoms. So the constitutional court and constitutional doctrine in Lithuania was very much developed to prove and to show that that university is, how to say, the island of intellectual, of the brains of the society. And this island should be protected from outside challenges. Therefore, we believe that constitutional doctrine created a very good foundation for the future development of the free speech, free thinking, alternative thinking. Because in countries, in post-Soviet area, countries with a difficult past, those questions are still of the big importance.
Right. I'm guessing that when the Nazis were here and when the Soviets were here, that they were not very receptive to academic freedom. And yes, so subsequently, then, yes, you all value it very highly.
Yes, and in our history, there were a few times when the university was closed, prohibited. We had to move to Kaunas, and we came could back to the from the second largest city of Lithuania in times of aggression. But still, the university survived. And you were traveling, you were exploring the nice buildings, the courtyards of the old campus. But we say this is not the buildings, not the campus, not the walls which makes university, the people make university. We think that the community, academic community, is at the core of a whole phenomenon of education, of giving to the young people experience and knowledge with the hope that they will use it for the benefit of the country. This is possible with the people, and unique thinking and possibility to be free and independent, those freedoms and those features are not self-evident. You have to be not only financially independent, but you have also to be free in your mind, in your thinking, which is quite difficult in post-Soviet societies.
Yeah, but I think maybe your experience with the Soviets and earlier with the Germans may have reinforced your sense of how important that is. I know that we have those debates in the United States, especially at state-sponsored universities, when a professor will say or do something there that someone in the government doesn't like. Mm-hmm. They will often be pressured by those government people and sometimes even threatened with funding cuts. And that is a real issue, and I think it will always be a real issue.
You pointed very rightly that this could be in every country, this could be in every stage of development. Because
yes.
Therefore, we think and we should actually proclaim the universal freedoms of academic education, of education, of higher education, by underlining the importance of academia to the development of the society as a whole. And if there will be too much commerce within the higher education, or there will be too much centralized, structured, strongly controlled approach, both those approaches are not suitable to pursue our goals to create critically thinking, free academic minds, which could be used for the society, for the benefit of the society. Therefore, I would say those debates, they happen in every country, and sometimes it's good to have a constitutional doctrine on that.
Yes, I would like our Supreme Court to step in and help out a little bit in that regard. And from time to time they have. And generally speaking, our Supreme Court recognizes academic freedom as part of the constitutional right to free speech, and an important part. But nonetheless, the controversies continue. Well, that's fantastic. You said at one time in its history, Vilnius University actually was all behind walls and had such autonomy that the state couldn't even send in the police to arrest people without the permission of the rector.
And if we look back at those years, at those times, centuries ago, we should ask ourselves, what is the real meaning of that? Why the power of the state was restricted within the walls of the university? It also has a certain meaning. It's also for the protection of the freedom to think freely, to say what you think is right, and to protect our opinion. And as I told you, in the small countries, in the countries with the young democracies, this could be difficult to achieve. But we still, I think, the autonomy of the university gives us the chance and opportunity to go on and to stress this independent academic point of view.
My wife, of course, Priscilla, is here on a Fulbright scholarship. Thank you for inviting her. She's had a great time.
It was a pleasure and honor to host her.
Thank you so very much. And among the classes that she's been teaching for you is a class called the Erasmus Program, which I also had the pleasure of visiting and teaching earlier this week. I had a very good time. Could you explain what the Erasmus program is?
Erasmus program is a European Union-funded program which has a primary aim to give opportunity for the students in each European country to visit another university in another country for a semester or for 2 semesters. We see here the great opportunity to spread idea of Europe to the young generation, to the students. I would not say that the knowledge, exact knowledge, is the primary goal of this program. We think the benefit itself, that they can travel, that they can see the other systems, they can have friends, and to see how beautiful the world is, not only inside your homeland, but outside, actually, and to learn about yourself from outside. This is maybe one of my first impressions when I was also studying in Germany for 1.5 years. This is not the study of German legal system.
No.
Basically, by studying German legal system, I learned how individual or how specific my system is, and Lithuanian legal system is, what are the differences. And from this broader perspective, gives us more flexibility, more freedom to look for the better solution sometimes. Therefore, this study visit abroad, which we think every student should take once in a lifetime, is so beneficial and should be supported regardless of financial situation in the European Union. So the program is really very successful, and we are also very happy that from this program also the students from third countries can benefit, like Ukraine, Georgia, Russia, Belarus.
European Union will actually pay for those students to get in the program.
If they are enrolled in our program, they can also use this opportunity. So we are trying to, in this way, to embrace those countries, embrace those nations by saying and showing what Europe actually is and how we, I would say, crush the borders by traveling, by learning, by meeting people. This is really a more powerful tool to change the mentality of people than the documents, than the legal provisions.
Ich habe nicht gewusst, dass Sie in Deutschland studiert.
Ja, das habe ich.
Das habe ich.
Yeah.
And so you speak German too?
Of course.
How many darn languages do you speak, Thomas?
Well, you know, at Lithuanian language is a mother tongue, but of course, in Soviet times, we used to have only three TV channels, two Russian channels and one Lithuanian channel. And the Russian language was obligatory from the first year in the school. So for my generation and generations, older generations, everybody speaks Russian fluently.
So you got Lithuanian, you got Russian, you obviously have English, now you've got German. What
German,
else you got in there?
Polish and French.
Polish and French. Well, that's only six.
Well,
I think you need a few more.
Yes, okay. I agree. But some people, especially from America, just adore or are surprised by the fact that so many people use many languages.
Right.
Multilingual approach is necessary also from the legal perspective, because it gives, as I told you, it gives you more possibilities, let's say, to work with more legal systems and to borrow sometimes good practices. So this is our benefit. And as we say in Lithuanian language, if you learn something, you will not carry it as a burden.
No, not at all.
On your shoulders.
No, I agree with you so much. Several things you said. First of all, just the idea that studying abroad, the primary purpose is simply to see the rest of the world and see that, well, what I like to say is that human beings are essentially the same wherever you go. Everybody basically wants the same things in life. They want a good job. They want a nice home to live in. They want good schools to send their kids to. We're all basically want the same things. We have different ways of getting them and different ways of organizing society. But that's what makes life interesting. Learning a language also helps you to, even just one, and I only have a little bit of German, but even just doing it once with one language helps you to get to the point where you realize, again, that people are basically the same and they're thinking the same things and they're saying the same things that you are. And so I applaud this. But something else you said really brings home to me what I experienced with Priscilla's class, the Erasmus students. We had a student there, let me think, we had one from Spain. We had one from Ukraine. We had one from Belarus. I think there's also a Russian student. There might also be a German or two. They all brought their own perspectives.
Yeah.
And so while I was talking primarily about how the American constitutional system works, there was a lot of very interesting discussion when the students would get interested in a certain topic, and it came out that students from certain countries said, well, you know, we don't have a lot of free speech in our country. Mm-hmm. Students from other countries, mostly in Western Europe, would say, well, we do have free speech, but we have more regulation than you do. And they would talk about things like hate speech, which is much more regulated in Europe than it is in the United States. It was a very, very interesting discussion about how everybody has very similar interests and values, but maybe takes different approaches to realizing them. And so, yes, I thought the Erasmus students were just absolutely marvelous. I also met some of your master students.
Yes.
And the master students were from several different countries. They were from Germany. They were from the Czech Republic, the German students and the French student, and students from several other countries. And they were also very similarly interested and very, very engaged. So I think you have some wonderful programs here at Vilnius University.
This is our objective, to invite as many nations and as many people as possible, to show them how beautiful our country is.
And it is.
But also to show how democratic society can live and can benefit from the free market economy, from the recognition of fundamental rights and freedoms of person. And this gives us also what is already maybe a bit forgotten, the primary idea of integration, of European integration.
Mm-hmm.
It's a necessity to forget about differences and necessity to forget about wars. We don't need wars. So this is primary.
I would agree with you on that one.
This is primary objective of integration. So if we want to avoid nationalism, if we want to avoid extremist approaches, we need to bring them to the table, just to say, let's drink a beer,
yes,
to discuss
several. Better several,
yes, and then we will be on the path to freedom and prosperity.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm in the midst of a perfectly delightful discussion with the Dean of Vilnius University's Law Faculty, Dr. Tomas Davulis, who was just explaining the importance of integration and getting to know people from all over Europe in preventing wars. As he says, we want to get everybody together and have them drink a beer. We were in a coffee shop, Thomas and I, and unfortunately we were drinking coffee, but it was fun nonetheless. After the break, we'll finish our discussion with Thomas, and then we'll have another couple of words with my wife, the Fulbright scholar, Priscilla Harris. Stick around. And now it's time to finish our discussion with Tomas Davulis, the Dean of the Law Faculty at Vilnius University in Lithuania.
And that reminds me of what you were so kind to do yesterday. We had met at dinner a couple of nights ago. Thank you. That was a wonderful dinner that you took Priscilla and me to. That was wonderful. And Vigita was with us as well.
Yes.
Hello, Vigita. That was just wonderful. And when we talked about these issues, you very kindly invited me to join you at a conference yesterday that was about the Baltic investment.
Baltic Investors Forum, yes.
Right, the Baltic Investments Forum. I didn't realize until I got there what a very important event this was, because the first person you introduced me to was your defense minister and your foreign minister, and then you introduced me to the plenipotentiary, essentially the ambassador to to Ukraine. And if we hadn't missed each other at lunch, I would have gotten to meet the prime minister as well. And it was just a remarkable, remarkable experience. And that was really the debate, wasn't it? We had a speaker there from the United States who was actually okay with nationalism and didn't see a problem with the breakup or the, shall we say, less integration within the European Union. And then you had several people there from Lithuania and from France that were much more pro-European Union. Now, could you summarize that debate? How did you see it yesterday? I thought it was very interesting.
We in Lithuania, we consider ourselves European. Our history taught us that we have to look for possibilities to survive as a nation and to build a prosperous society. When we ask ourselves how we can achieve that, we saw that integration with other countries, strive for protection of human rights, for economic prosperity. This is our future. This is our future, and in order to be in Europe, there is no other alternative for us. Therefore, we strongly support European Union, knowing that the Union, especially nowadays, have tremendous problems,
right.
Difficulties, legitimacy problems, and now self-determination questions arises, and the future development is also not clear for today. But we still think that if we can sit at the table, we can not only discuss, but also find a solution which is the best for everyone. Of course, in this debate, there are several approaches possible. One approach is more nationalism, another approach is more supranationalism in favor of more integration, in favor of more federalism in Europe. But if we could define clearly what our goals are for today and for the foreseen future, we can just say that we should have the same faith. In terms of the same future. So we have to be together in order to survive for all those external challenges and internal challenges. And in the unity, we can find the strength. This is the attitude in my country. And you would see that maybe in Poland and in Hungary, the Euroscepticism is higher than here, but in Lithuania, we are overwhelming Euro optimists, because we see here our security first, we see here possibility for prosperity, and we see here, as I told you, the idea of Europe. actually we are in love with Europe, with European
that,
idea.
That to me is really the heart of the discussion yesterday, because we had the American who's very much a Eurosceptic, and in fact even spoke positively of both Poland and Hungary as being places where nationalism might actually put them in a better position over the next few years. Of course, the European Union people disagreed with him on that subject. That's part of a larger debate that's happening all over the world. In fact, you know, we can go back a few years and say the Greek debt crisis, followed by Brexit, yes. Followed by resurgent Russia, putting pressure on the European Union from the East, mirrored in our country by a withdrawal from the world stage and voting for President Trump, who's got his much more isolationist America First sort of perspective. And it's remarkable to see that how it's playing out. I mean, of course, just the other day, just yesterday, on the calendar, the president pulled out of the Paris climate deal. But you're nonetheless a Euro-optimist. Things don't seem to be going well for the European Union these days. Why are you still an optimist?
Because European is not that weak as you think.
Right.
And the strength is in the history and in a common faith. Because we still are this very strong economy,
right?
And we still think that that the values of the our values, common values, the values we share, they can help us to find the solutions. Those solutions will not be easy to find. Those solutions will be not quick. Also, maybe they will cause some problems, difficulties in implementation. But those solutions would be right for those people living in this continent. We cannot sometimes understand American way of thinking. We cannot sometimes understand how America functions. It was also underlined.
Join the club. I don't understand it myself. I did think that was very, very funny yesterday after it was Mr. Friedman, the American, gave his speech. That several of the people who came up there, what was a fellow from France? He said something along the lines of, well, typical American simplification of a very complex problem. And then, of course, the American came back and said, oh, you French are always hard to follow and unpredictable. So there was a little bit of friendly rivalry, or maybe not so friendly rivalry in terms of the way people looked at this. But you're really talking about a spiritual thing, is what it really comes down to. You can talk about the advantages to trade of being in the Union, or the advantages of nationalism when it comes to self-determination. I mean, there are practical things to argue. But that's what I kept hearing from the Lithuanians and from the people from the EU, from France. They have the same idea you've been expressing. This, we're trying to do something here in Europe that goes beyond trade agreements, that goes beyond military alliances. It goes to developing a common set of values and therefore a common European identity.
Exactly.
And that's a long-term project.
Exactly.
And you still think that's on track, or at least can be on track?
I think if we look what Europe, what European Union, what the integration process gave to us, what we should not forget, this is the freedom. We have a peace in the continent for the longest period of time.
Yeah, I can't look back in recent history, the last few hundred years, to a period of 70 years where there hasn't been a war. But we've had that.
So we are just lucky to have this long period of time, and I hope this will last and last forever. But here in this, our peace process, our peaceful life together, we are still able to strengthen ourselves by underlying our strong sides and improving where we are not that good. What European Union gives to our country is the, let's say, pool of options how to improve yourself. We are not developing ourselves autonomously, which is not necessarily good for the young democracy, mm-hmm. if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes.
That's why the good sort of options with the support, intellectual support, financial support, to introduce the structural reforms, to change the life of the people for the benefit, for the good of the people. This is what the Europe is currently proposing to us, and we're taking this opportunity. We're taking the participation, the membership very seriously. We understand that it is our future at stake, as a free country, as an independent country, and also as a prosperous country.
Right.
We suffered a lot from integration process.
Yes.
We lost 700,000 people out of 3.5. So you can imagine.
Out of 3.5 million.
Out of 3.5 million.
700,000 people left.
If you understand that 20% of population left, and this is not the worst part, this is the best thing, best people, young people, young blood, intellectuals, they left the country. This is our tragedy.
And they're looking for just other opportunities.
Exactly. That's why we have to be very quick in building the country, which could be attractive for those who remain, or attractive for those who will return.
Well, I'll put in a good word for you. Anybody who has a lot of money and wants to invest, they should come to Lithuania, because I think it's absolutely gorgeous. The people here are extremely friendly. Vilnius, which is primarily what I've seen, is a beautiful European city with wonderful winding streets and a wonderful brew pub or restaurant in every corner, and I'm trying to visit all of them. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful place. But there are different difficulties. In fact, there was a lengthy discussion about one particular investment opportunity that didn't work out well. It was a major petrochemical refinery, and an American company came in and tried to. It was an old Soviet era facility,
yes.
And they were going to renovate it, and I don't know all the details, but the general storyline was that it simply had not worked out as well as people had wanted it to. And that was very important, because Vilnius and Lithuania generally need lots yes. of Western investment. But I think that there were some very good lessons that people were talking about that they pulled from that experience.
Exactly. And I would say that we even also not realize or not underline the importance of foreign investment. This is not gives not only the opportunity for our people to have more and better jobs, better paid jobs with the more added value and higher productivity, but it also gives us the security. Foreign investment, especially American investment, gives the security for the country. And we should be open-minded, we should be friendly, and we should create those conditions. And this is also very important to say that very high proportion of highly skilled workers.
Right.
So, and the labor costs are not very high here, but you still have plenty of brilliant people educated in universities and professional schools. And this.
So you graduate a lot of people every year who need jobs and who want to work.
And in which we are able to attract to IT companies to create here centers.
You got amazing internet here, amazing Wi-Fi.
This is the fastest internet in the world.
I don't doubt it. It was very, very fast, and I've been enjoying using it. You mentioned one other thing, and you mentioned security, and so we should mention, especially for Americans who don't know a lot about European geography, that Lithuania is in some sense very much on the front line. I mean, right next door is Belarus, and then just beyond that is Russia. And, of course, we've mentioned the Russian occupation, but Russia has occupied you twice in the last 100 years, before World War II and after World War II. And it wasn't very pleasant. In fact, Priscilla and I just spent some time at the KGB Museum, where we saw what happened to a lot of Lithuanians who dared defy the Soviet occupation. So you're a member of NATO now.
Yes.
The United States has pledged to come to your defense if, in fact, you are attacked. So at the very least, it's in the U.S. interest to make sure that you're strong so that you don't get attacked, because we certainly don't want that situation to occur. None of us does.
Nobody knows. Nobody wants, yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's been a little bit more tension lately, and you've actually got some German brigades here, don't you, from NATO, who are helping. Well, certainly hope that that all blows over in the very near future. Let's end up with one other thing. You're going somewhere tonight. You were very kind to agree to this interview today, because you're jetting off where?
To Ukraine. Basically, this is one of the new routes for Lithuanians established in the last few years, because Ukraine has chosen the European way of development. And there was a time when Lithuania was the biggest country in Europe,
right,
by territorium. So right. The Ukrainians were our brothers. We were in the same state together with them. And now we are in different states, but we still feel the same for them. We feel friendship, we feel love for them. And that's why we think that it's our destiny to help them in their fight for the better country, for democratic country with the rule of law and strong Western European integration.
Now, that's got to be a great challenge since, what, the eastern third of their country is now occupied by Russia and Crimea is gone, and yet they're still trying to build. They're still trying to make their country better.
Therefore, they need our support.
Even more.
Yes.
And you go there every few weeks, right?
We have a project, also European Union project, which belongs to the framework of twinning projects. Twinning, which means you have to find, or you find the similar or the same public institution in your country, in that country. So the two countries, two institutions doing basically the same. And then with your twin brother, basically, you try to help to improve the functioning, the system. And we now working with the ombudsman office of Ukraine, helping to reconstruct the office to make it more efficient, to reinforce the legislation and to help them in this way. So a lot of Lithuanians are involved in a number of different projects, and we still are of use for everybody here, because we know language, we know mentality, we've gone through the processes already, and therefore our experience is quite unique, and this is of the value, this is a good value for the region, and we hope we'll be having more and more projects to help them. And as you told you rightly, we hope that they will be also on the same path as we are now.
Well, Thomas, thank you very much for speaking with us today. This has
thank
been
you, sir.
Very, very enlightening. And I will finish by saying, Acho.
Prasho. The answer in Lithuanian is thank you. Prasho.
Prasho.
Thank you very much.
And now we've got just a minute or two to finish up with my wife, Priscilla, the Fulbright scholar. We talked about a lot of interesting things over there, but one thing really stuck out in my mind. Her students thought that one particular part of our American Constitution was the most important.
Hands down, I think it was unanimous. Every student thought the most important right we had in our U.S. Constitution was the right of free speech. I don't think we Americans take free speech for granted. I do think we're very aware of how precious that freedom is. But when you look at some of the exhibits in the KGB Museum, I think there was a Lutheran minister who wrote a two-page letter to the Soviets saying, you need to stop doing what you're doing. And he was sent to hard labor camp for 10 years, and he died there before his 10 years was up. And that's what lack of free speech does. You get sent to a labor camp you write.
Well, running short on time, so what was your favorite thing there?
That is so hard.
It was clearly when I came to visit you, right?
Well, yes, of course, when my husband came.
Right.
But of course, you know, that's just a given.
Yeah.
I think just meeting the people who've been so nice, and my Lithuanian language skills are so lacking, but I try to say a few words and they'll smile and laugh and quickly switch to English, but I think they do appreciate the effort. But besides the people, I think just walking around the old town of Vilnius, it has so much history. And Vilnius University, the main campus, has this beautiful courtyard that just takes your breath away. And this room that's hand-painted, it was the library of Vilnius University. It just is just stunning. And I think there's just so much history here. You really feel you're in a different place. I highly recommend, if people are thinking about, where can I go that's a little bit different, I say, come to Vilnius. Just come to Vilnius. It's just a wonderful place, and it's very affordable, and the people are very friendly.
Indeed they are.
And that's our show. Thanks so very much to Tomas Davulis, who is the Dean of the Law Faculty at Vilnius University in Lithuania. What a fascinating discussion. Thanks also to my lovely wife, Priscilla. Looking forward to seeing you again soon, honey. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our music is by the fifes and drums of Colonial Williamsburg. Our distribution engineer is Chad Barrett. My name is Stuart Harrison. Remember, you are a part of the American experiment and maybe even the European experiment.